Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
I keep thinking it's Friday. I mean, it kind of is, but it's not. It's Thursday. Do you know what I mean?
It's that Thursday feeling with the IGN UK podcast, boys. I'm Joe Scribbles. Have I had 2 weeks off?
You have.
I feel like I haven't done this for
ages. You've been hunting down the mama.
I have been hunting down the mama. We'll talk more about that later. It's less alarming than it sounds. I'm joined by Simon Cardy, the alarming one. Matt Purslow.
Hello.
The one whose mic keeps going mad and may do so again. And Dale Driver.
Hello, Joe. Can you adjust your camera so I can see your eyes?
All
I can see is your nose.
This is my whole deal.
Your nose and your mustache. Yeah. That's all I can see.
Have we talked about my mustache?
Probably we shouldn't.
Pretty thick.
Is that thick with two C's?
Dummy thick.
We're back to before manners. Just why not?
Yeah. Who even gives? I mean, it's basically been a four manner with Dale just kind of not paying much attention for the last few weeks, right?
Yeah, that's kind of sounds about right.
I wasn't paying attention again.
There we go.
Just to keep you updated because I've been away. I'm now in full isolation because my partner started showing some symptoms. She's fine. It's fine. I'm not in trouble. But what that means is that I now actively get angry at people I see walking past on the street, and I've started doing fake kung fu in my house.
What?
Every time I walk past Anna on the sofa, I'm just doing like fake kung fu moves.
Okay. Like you got to fight off the virus somehow.
Well, I'm not getting any other exercise. Literally, fake kung fu is the only cardio I'm doing right now.
I mean, you haven't
got this cardio at the moment, so.
Oh, God. You could do more legitimate forms of cardio, mate. Have you thought about that?
Absolutely not. Actually, to be honest, I've got Ring Fit, and I was like, oh, I'll do that. And then I remembered that the floors in my flat are so thin that even silent mode disturbs my downstairs neighbour. So, I basically just have to sort of stand and wave my arms around, and that's as much kung fu cardio as
I can
do.
Are you stocked up on food?
No! We thought we had way more than we did, and it turns out no one delivers except this one slightly dodgy-looking sort of farm shop that we're waiting for our delivery to come through for. So we'll either get a veg box full of rotten fruit or...
something delicious.
Or it'll be fine.
Yeah. Amazon Prime Now, they do grocery shopping.
They have no delivery slots. Yeah. The most annoying part is, right, you can go through the whole Amazon Fresh, I believe it's called, pantry, and it's like you have to put in 40 quid's worth of stuff to be able to order. So you do that, and then at the end it's like, fuck you, there's no delivery slots, you're dead.
It's good fun.
So, so it's great. I'm having a lovely time. Anyway, enough about me. What about the Final Fantasy VII remake, which... I certainly haven't.
Let me tell you all about it. Let me tell you all about it. I haven't played it yet. So there we go.
Cool.
Was that worth it?
I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that. I'm not.
Matt
and Dale. I'm not playing it until I finish Persona. So take it away, lads.
Cardi.
Yeah. Go on, Dale. You kick it off.
Okay. So, me and Dale have now finished the entire game. And I think. Now, you've also done... I've noticed that you've been playing as well when I've had a cheeky look at what you've been playing on on Friends List.
Yep.
So you've still been... So I think we've now done quite a lot of the end game stuff as well, so we've got a fairly holistic view. I think it's interesting that we both have similar viewpoints on it, but in general, I'd say I like it a lot more than you do.
That sounds like life in general.
I mean, I am like mixed on life, ups and downs. So I I think I've warmed to it more as time's gone by. I think my first impressions wasn't as good as maybe yours were. Like, I think the first, maybe say 5 hours, I found to be quite boring. Like, I really liked the combat, but I'd already had a taste of the combat in the demo anyway. But what I didn't enjoy was how the environments were built in the first section. And also, I find everything to do with like the steampunky sort of Midgar aesthetic is not that appealing to me. Like, it was never my favorite bit in the original game. And for me, in the original game, once you got to War Market, that's where it became really interesting. When it leans into being wacky and silly, that's what I really
like. Isn't that where all the perverted stuff happens as well?
It is where the perverted stuff happens. Well, it depends. If you think it's perverted or not, mate, like, you know.
I think,
don't kink shame. Yeah.
I think it's actually got, there's some really nice wholesome elements. I mean, to the
original, I haven't played the new one, so, but I'm sure the original has some stuff that maybe shouldn't. But there we go. Carry on.
All right. Once I met Aerith in the church, I think from then on, I loved this game. Like, I really got on with it. I still enjoyed the combat, but now I enjoyed the areas I was exploring. I enjoyed the story more. And then my only other negative was the ending, which I'm not going to spoil, obviously, but I think is a major misstep for me and just went a bit too crazy. But overall, I do think it's like, so we gave it an 8 on site, and I think that's a pretty fair score for me. Like, I think there's a lot of filler in there, but there's some really good stuff in there, and it's a really like faithful remake as well.
Mm-hmm. I've heard a lot about the ending. Without giving anything away, does it end in a way that leaves you unsure about where the next game goes? Like, is it that kind of different?
I think that's fair to say. How do you say this last word?
Same but different, I guess, to a point.
Yeah. What I've heard is because like someone like me who hasn't played the original, by the end of this game, it sounds like you might be completely lost unless you speak to someone who knows that game for about an hour.
I think
I heard the words Kingdom Hearts bullshit.
I think it relies surprisingly on having a lot of knowledge of the story overall, like the stuff in it, which I think you would be lost if you didn't know what the full story of Final Fantasy VII was. And absolutely. I think at this point in time, we can't really discuss anything to do with Final Fantasy VII's story because we're now at a point where there are lots of newcomers, and I wouldn't even want to spoil too much of what happens in this section of the game for them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's stuff that happens at the end that, like, I only know because I know that game inside out.
Hmm. Yeah, it's not like somebody who played the original game would come into it and be like, oh, I understand. You have to, like, really know that game, like, have, like, you know the information from recently, and then also explore the other games like Crisis Core and Dirge of Cerberus and all, you know, all these spin-off games and really being engrossed in it. Like, if you played it once back when it first came out, you're going to be lost. And if you've never played it, you're going to be completely lost at the end. It's crazy.
I get that for someone maybe like you, Matt, that is an amazing thing they're doing. Is it?
It was amazing.
You'd appreciate it at least what they're going for, maybe. Mm-hmm. Like, is it good that someone who doesn't know this, there's going to be so many people coming to this fresh. Is it good that they're going to be potentially completely lost by the end of it?
No, not really.
I mean, it's good for our End and Explained video. That's cool.
But I think it's okay if, I'd be a lot more accepting of it if we knew part two was coming out in a year or less. But we have no idea when we're getting the rest of the story.
No, I've not got a clue. Like, I would hope that it's, as you say, like, they've now built this engine, they've now built all the combat system, they've now built the way that their environment tech works. Like, I'd hope that we wouldn't have to wait, and presumably we won't wait the same amount of time, because we have to remember that this project basically got restarted after it had been announced, because it was originally CyberConnect 2 that were producing it, and then it moved entirely in-house. So I hope that the development time isn't as long. But yeah, I have no idea when the next one's coming out.
I would say like a crazy amount of this game is cutscenes as well. Like, there's so much like visual fidelity of cutscenes. Like, and obviously they're not the sort of thing, like, it's easy to say, oh, they've built the engine, now it's easy. And it's like, how much time are they spending on these cutscenes? Because they look incredible.
Oh yeah,
I'm going to say it looks phenomenal from what I've seen.
Wow, in places.
I do worry that going into next gen, now that it's possible to make cutscenes that look this good, and still seem in engine, that we are going to get a rash of games where people are like, fuck it, we're just going to put a film in the middle of your game. Because it's easy now. Well, easy is the wrong term. It is much easier now to do that. Mm. And if you're making a narrative game, it is easier to tell a story when you're not letting someone interfere with it. And like Death Stranding and this, and like this move towards extreme high fidelity gaming with big stories.
You know,
like,
The Last of Us Part Two, how much of that is going to be like,
I have a lot more faith in Last of Us 2 based on The Last of Us. The way it tells story, you know, a big part of that first game
Even
is the way
Uncharted
it tells a story.
Uncharted 4 was a lot more cutscene heavy than previous Uncharteds were.
I think part of the thing, though, is with Final Fantasy VII is it is a remake of a game from 1997, and it basically uses the same storytelling technique as that. Like, like literally, even though these environments are so much bigger than they were before and, you know, so much more beautiful, actually the way that you progress through the story is a traditional PS1 era Final Fantasy. And so that means that it is a case of walking through areas that have enemies to battle, getting to an area, and then chatting to someone. And I never felt that that felt dated, but it certainly felt traditional.
I'd say the area, because I had to cut Final Fantasy video, the area that looked particularly nice was, is it the where you're picking flowers with Aerith? I don't know.
Oh,
where.
Yeah, so it's Aerith's house.
Okay, yeah, that area looks incredible.
Absolutely. And the thing that I love a lot about this game, but I think it's probably, aside from the combat, its chief sort of triumph is the characterization. Like, these characters have distinct arcs that they didn't have in this span of time in the original game. Like, I think a lot of people that have only played the demo might find that Cloud's a bit of an arsehole, and that's absolutely fair, but he has an arc over the entirety of the original game which sees him sort of soften from this ex-mercenary into someone that's a lot more like invested in the people around him, and you see that happen in a smaller element over the span of this game, and seeing all of his interactions like with Tifa, with Barra, with Aerith, there's so much astonishing characterization here. Like, there's some stuff with Tifa towards the end of it where like it genuinely made my heart melt. Like, it's so well put together, and like, I've got already such affinity for these characters, but seeing it done on this level, I thought was something that was really special.
I think they've definitely grown Aerith as well as a character. Like, from the original, she was just this girl who was just obsessed. As soon as she met Cloud, she wanted him as a boyfriend, and she was constantly making jokes about, you can be my boyfriend. Whereas in this one, it's not like that. She's just, you know, a person with a good heart is looking to help people.
It's interesting what they've done with the romancing, actually, because I think that love triangle between Cloud, Tifa, and Aerith was a big deal in the original. It's much, much more subdued now. Like, as you say, Aerith isn't... There's the joke about her paying him via a date.
Yeah.
But beyond that, like, it's... Despite the fact it's quite a thirsty game in some ways, like it has, it basically has some of the most beautiful characters sort of like I've seen in a long time. And Jesse, who wasn't a very well characterized character in the original, she is the like flirtiest character I've seen in the game for a long time. But like the dynamics of the whole thing have changed rapidly.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, Jesse knows what she wants and she is going to get it.
Like, story things aside, I think the one thing I've seen everyone agree on is that fundamentally it's just really fun. And that's what I'm into. I'm into fun. And I don't know, every time I didn't play the demo because I just wanted to wait. And every time I see the combat, it does just look fun. It looks like a refined Kingdom Hearts combat to me, which is what I want, because I enjoy Kingdom Hearts, but I do find the combat just a little... They throw so much at you, and you don't know really what's going on half the time. Whereas this, it looks like you genuinely have to think about it and not just button bash.
Well, I would say, like, the Materia system has its own quirks anyway, and if you come in from the original, you kind of have a leg up there. But even at this point, I'm like 50 hours in now, and I'm doing a lot of endgame stuff, and I'm still, like, learning new techniques and new combinations of Materia to get new results. Like, it's very elemental based and things like that, but then you're always developing these new types that can really help in the situations. So it's quite deep, even though, you know, it appears to be like shallow. It appears to be just keep mashing square and then throw a fire every now and again, but it's way more to it than that.
The thing I really love as well is that you have like when you get new weapons, it's not like this weapon replaces the one you had before. Like they all have their pros and cons. Mm. And each new weapon you get teaches you a new ability that doesn't require magic points and doesn't use materia. And some of those abilities, like, not only are incredibly useful in combat, like the way those abilities are animated, like Tifa has one called Starstrike, yeah. which is just like she starts with a couple of slow beats and then it turns into like mad full anime, like maybe 20 strikes within the space of 2 seconds. And that looks like it's genuinely, I think it is the best looking combat I've ever seen in a game in terms of that Japanese action style. Like I've not seen anything that looks so dynamic.
Mm. So I actually thought that about 15 at the time that came out, and so it feels like they are it also, to me, without a lot of Kingdom Hearts knowledge, it looks like the combat looks like a better 15 combat, which I'm into, because I did enjoy how 15
yeah,
worked.
Absolutely.
And yes, like you say, that I remember when I first played the Final Fantasy 15 demo, and there was a bit where I accidentally did a co-op move with another character in my party. And then when they finished it, they like fist bumped mm-hmm. as part of the animation. I was like, this is one of the coolest things I've ever seen in a combat game. Like, it's such a nice way to make that feel like your party is a party of people working together. And I am into the idea of 7 kind of pushing that along and really experimenting with how much they can do with that idea of like a party's not just a makeup of strategical decisions, but the characters you want to see fight together. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of a nice way to work with that.
Because you have to swap between characters. You can't. The way to best imagine it is it's not just a party of characters. Like they're actually different weapons. So Cloud is your close combat guy. Aerith is your caster. Barret is your long range. And when you need those things, you physically, they will attack on their own. But to get the best out of them, you have to swap to them. And as you're swapping around, they're saying things to each other. They're like, oh, like Barret will come in, he's like, oh, you need me now. And sort of like Aerith is like, no, I'm here to support you. And all of those little banter bits, like it, as you say, it makes you feel like they're working together as a team.
Mm. I have one question for you boys. As someone who hasn't played the original, and I think a few people have this dilemma, when they finish this game, I probably will be tempted to go and play the original to see the story. Do you think that's something you should do, or at this point you should just wait for part two?
I would do it.
Yeah, like especially just play the bit you've just experienced in the remake, and then also while you're waiting for the sequel, you can carry on and play the rest of the game, and then see how they're going to approach the sequel. Because you know who knows what that sequel is going to look like and what shape it's going to be in, and so
we
it's
don't even know if it's just one more part or two more parts or three more.
I mean,
parts.
Like at the moment, I'm guessing another two. But the thing that's important is, this game expands and it doesn't radically change that storyline, but it expands and adds new things. Mm. I think like when you go back, you're not going to be ruining anything that comes forward for you, because we don't know what those next games will be like. And maybe at that point, it would be nice for you to see what could be potentially on the horizon. And then you get the same experience that like me and Dale are going through, where we get the surprises of what's new next time.
Yeah, that's the way I'm looking at it. I think I will, when I finish this, go to the original, because I don't just want to read the story. Actually, a good way of putting it is our friend Tam from GameSpot put it a great way to me, which is, at this point, if you go back to the original, it'll be like reading the Wikipedia version of this story, because you've got so much less detail. But I kind of want to do that,
well.
I think I'm going to do it. But I do have to play this one first. So.
What's going to take you 35 hours on this one can take you like 3-4 hours on that one. So it's going to be crazy, like seeing how fast it moves in comparison.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting actually to see somebody playing it for the first time and then going back and playing the original afterwards instead of this way around.
Mm. There we go. Sounds fun.
I think, what a lot of jolly fun we've had. And now, from a futuristic retelling of a very old PS1 product to another DualSense.
You're so down on this.
PlayStation 5 controller.
I think it looks fine.
I think the DualSense looks horrific.
I don't like the name. The name is off-putting.
Do you want to say it looks like condoms?
It looks like condoms, sounds like a sex toy. Like, what's wrong with DualShock? That sounds more like a 2001 hair gel, but at least that's better.
Well, the idea is that you can sense the game through the controller.
Just DualShock 5.
Do people want that?
Do people call it that
game
anyway?
The controller?
I just actually say it's my PlayStation controller.
Okay. So. I'll put it down. Like I think it's a shame that they dropped the classic look of the DualShock. Like, this is a controller that doesn't look like a fundamental PlayStation product so much anymore.
Mm.
I like that. Whereas the Xbox is, you know, I don't want to completely shit on what Microsoft are doing because I am really interested in the Series X. But what Microsoft are doing is they're making a bigger, more powerful version of what they made before. I like that everything that PlayStation are thinking about is the stuff that's just around power. So audio, so faster loading speeds, changing the way that people have to physically build their games. And then with the controller, it's like, we want you to be able to feel your games in a more higher fidelity than, in the way that sort of like, Xbox sort of tried this by putting rumble motors in the triggers on the Xbox One. And admittedly, nobody's ever used that aside from like two Forza games.
Yeah.
My hope would be like, I genuinely would be like pretty into the idea of that promise of when I pull back the trigger in Horizon Zero Dawn, like I'm feeling the tension of a bowstring. Like, if it actually works, then I'm well into that. But like, I have to wait and see if they actually do that, right?
Well, if there's one game it will work for, it'll be that if Horizon Zero 2 is a launch game, which a lot of people think it could be, like, they'll definitely have that sort of stuff ready for that to show it off.
I do think, I will say, like, what I dislike about it is mainly the coloration stuff. Like, I think when people have done those mock-ups where it's colored completely black, I think it looks fine. I am worried about what it means for the color and look of the console, because I think it might look like the Audi from iRobot, as I've said off this call. But I think it's fundamentally, the DualShock to me is a worse controller than the Xbox One controller. Like, I think the Xbox One Elite controller is the best video game controller ever made. And if they can get towards that, which they are certainly in shape, so how it feels will be similar to that, I'm into that. I don't mind the Vita-y transparent buttons the more I look at them. I do think it's a shame that we've lost the colours, but like,
I like the
colours. What are you going
to
do?
And to be fair, down the line, we know there's going to be colour variations.
Oh, as soon as they make a PS1 coloured version of that controller, I'm into it. Like, that's exactly what happened with DualShock 4. I was just like, yeah, give me that.
What do we think about the share button now being called create button?
It's just going to be for streaming, isn't it? Like, surely
little
that's all.
Built-in microphone as well, so you can basically make a phone call with your controller.
It's like,
I quite like that.
It's almost like implying that they've made another big step with it, when really it just seems like a rebranding of that button more than anything.
Yeah. What I think genuinely what they're doing is making sure that Nintendo and Xbox look old by having share buttons.
Yes, yeah.
While they have,
and what they've done,
thing
is, go on.
So I was just wondering, and this is not wholly my thoughts, because actually Max on Beyond Podcast was discussing this idea. The idea of maybe with Create, it points towards slightly smaller other elements, like being able to actually do a voice commentary over the clip you've made, or potentially turn your clip into a TikTok.
That's what I was thinking,
So I think that's eminently I think they'll be going to different social media platforms for sure. I also think part of it will be they did this, they did a patent and they've talked about it before. Like, Mark Cerny's talked about it around like this subject, but this idea that you're going to be able to do more on the home screen than like tell people what trophy you just got or way what you're playing. It's going to be like, I'm in this area trying to do this thing. So the create button could be this idea of you're creating a timestamp in a game. And there was even stuff in the patent about essentially creating inbuilt challenges. So you can go, I got from here to here and collected these things in this amount of time. Yeah. Can you beat me? And because of the loading screen stuff, people will be able to click your tile, jump into your exact save state, and then try and do that same thing. So you'll get like,
or if there's
Twitch creators and stuff creating their own challenges and like beat me.
Yeah.
While
exactly,
and
things
thing.
Like, if you're stuck in a part of a game, you can just create that save file, send it to your friend, they send it back, and they've got over the hump for you.
They kind of had the first steps of that already, though, with PS4, didn't they? There was initially an idea of doing something like share play.
You can do share play, I mean, I've used
done that?
I've done it a little bit.
I did it once, it was shite.
Yeah, I've done
it. It's all these little elements that I actually, like, I find all of this really interesting. Like, I'd rather see these kind of things in a console than just
more power.
Yeah, 20% better graphics than last gen. Like, honestly, Final Fantasy, like, I I think there is a couple of texture streaming issues in that game, but overall, Final Fantasy is as good as I really want a game to look. Like, God of War is as great as I, you know, I'm happy with. And yeah, it's great to see those improved upon, but I'm much more interested this gen in seeing, like, the quality of life and the creative solutions to other elements.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I'm happy about is that the idea that we have these consoles seemingly actually going in different mm-hmm. directions, which no one expected. Yeah. And, like, I know we're in a minority, but at some point we'll probably all at least regularly play both, if not own both.
Yeah.
Like, I almost always buy them both because I'm a slave. Yeah. but they're, like, I'm happy that we have two consoles that are trying different
Absolutely.
Things. And if that means that the exclusives are really cool in different ways, that's great. My only worry with the PS5 stuff is, at what point are we getting into that weird N64 thing where they made programming for it purposely hard and then it made all their games weird for ages?
Yeah. I mean, that's a PS3 like, issue as well, right? Is that yes. the cell broadband issue yeah. was yeah. such a development problem that, yeah, like, I like that this generation is not just two powerful PCs. Like, I've got a PC. I don't need that experience on a console. But as you say, like, there is the chance that all of this stuff, the IO tech that they're developing for PS5, I'm hoping that that's just basically advanced PC tech, because obviously that sort of stuff exists in SSDs as it is. But I don't want it to turn into a developmental hazard for developers, which means that suddenly you've just got a Series X game that sort of runs a bit odd on a PS5.
And yeah. I think... that's when you get to, like, Bayonetta, yeah. like, being an absolute shit show on PS3 compared to
Xbox. I think with this controller as well, you've now basically, with the microphone, you've got everything you need to make everything in Dreams, which further puts my point that Dreams is just going to be on PS5.
Yeah,
I do hope so.
Like,
that would be really
Dreams
cool.
lives in your controller now. as well as in
you
your
just
mind.
Whisper into your controller and it makes a game.
I've lived out many of my greatest dreams with a controller in hand. So there we go.
I was so sure that you were taking over Segway.
No.
Yeah,
I would never do that.
And another of those dreams is Cooking Mama.
I've never played a Cooking Mama.
I mean,
I know exactly what it is.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's fine, mate.
I know, I've got to admit, it's a holdover. I've got to come to terms. I've never played a Cooking Mama.
Well, imagine the Nintendo DS.
Yeah.
It's one of
them. Isn't it basically overcooked? Kind of.
No, not even.
You're
close.
making food.
Yeah, but it's about taking a dish and then doing that dish well. It's not about making a meal or serving it or anything like
I'm
that.
I'm making a meal of this.
So it's like, I'm chopping up a moussaka aubergine. That kind of thing.
Moussaka aubergine?
No. Yeah. An aubergine to go in a moussaka. No, you need a thin layer of aubergine
That's
mate.
Why I don't like moussaka, because I really don't like aubergine.
Oh, I'm into it, mate.
Aubergine's great.
Like aubergine, no.
It's a meaty.
Big roasted aubergine.
I'm up.
You can make
I'm up for most things.
Make a good vegan pulled pork out of an aubergine.
Hey, did you say an aubergine was meaty, Matt?
It is. Yeah, it's a bit meaty vegetable.
Yeah. Like a mushroom.
Yeah,
it's meaty. It is.
It's got a meat element, mate.
But I love mushrooms.
You're cooking your aubergine
That's
wrong.
The thing. I love mushrooms. Hate aubergines. I also hate courgette.
Yeah, I don't like courgette
unless it's like tightly. Really small bits in like a pasta or something like that.
Thinly sliced courgette on a barbecue with salt on it.
That sounds good.
That's real good. Mm. But otherwise, agreed.
Yes. Gross. Anyway.
Cooking Mama. I know this isn't our usual situation, but I have to kind of... This is more a venting situation for me. I've been following up. I don't know if anyone listening to this podcast will A, care about this, or B, have followed
You will care afterwards.
There's a game called Cooking Mama Cookstar, and it was meant to be out 2 weeks ago. And indeed, in the US, it did come out on Nintendo eShop. So it's the first Switch Cooking Mama game. It's also scheduled for PS4. Fuck knows where that is. But it came out on eShop and was there for a few hours and then disappeared. So people started going, what's happened with that? And then people started looking at the... release dates, and they were all over the place. Some retailers were already selling physical copies. Some were having them for, well, it should technically be coming out today in Europe as we record, so yesterday when we release. God knows if that's going to happen. Some people have it for the end of the month. Some people just aren't selling it anymore. Target in the US were selling it at one point and then just delisted it, and their PR won't tell me why. the point here is that no one really knows who, at first, no one knew who made it, because it didn't seem to be the Japanese company that invented it, that named themselves Cooking Mama Limited after selling 20 million Cooking Mama games.
Why haven't they made another one? What are they doing? Make money.
I've got, mate. So there's a lot at work here, and no straight answers. But what we do know is that they announced a company called Planet Entertainment in the US, who have several different addresses and at least two names, announced the, and don't talk to you if you email them, I'll tell you that. They announced they were going to release a new Cooking Mama game, but they were going to put blockchain technology in it, for two reasons. One, people could invest in the game in a new way, by using cryptocurrency. So that's kind of boring for us, but it's apparently important for investors in 21st century
world.
The
obvious connection, Cooking Mama and crypto.
Yeah.
Well, so the next thing was they wanted to make, and I actually think this sounds quite cool, just not in Cooking Mama. They wanted to make every copy have a unique crypto key, which meant that every game would be fundamentally unique in different ways, like it would display stuff differently. In every game, you would have a unique copy of Cooking Mama.
So some people would have aubergines and some wouldn't?
Well, I don't know how deep they were going to go with that kind of stuff, but it would be like, your kitchen looks different, or you'll get, like, it will generate a different version of the game for whichever one you have. But the big part of this was that that unique key would also mean you could digitally sell a used copy. So you could buy a digital game, and then you could sell that to someone as a used game because of the unique key would verify that that was the one copy that existed.
Okay.
So it's actually kind of solving a problem with digital reselling and actually opening a used games market in digital, which is quite cool. But when Cooking Mama didn't appear, all these people were suddenly like, it's a conspiracy theory. I wrote a story, which you can read, called The Switch Cooking Mama Game That Came Out and Then Disappeared. That was just me going, what the fuck is going on? Like, I had no real answers and I wasn't pretending to have any. I just wanted to get it off my chest that I'd been looking into Cooking Mama for 2 days.
Cooking Mama have been installing 5G and
5G masts in Birmingham that have been burned down. I brought this out, and then the next day, I seem to have accidentally helped birth a conspiracy theory because someone
you love it.
Put up a supposed Discord. I kind of love it and I'm frightened because QAnon might go for me now. Who knows what's going to happen? I'm going to be Pizzagating. Someone went on Discord and said, do not install the new Cooking Mama game. It is crypto mining in the background, which is essentially... You can set up a PC to automatically authenticate cryptocurrency payments that people make, and that earns you a bit of money. This is a trade. Some people do it full time. The problem here is, A, people reverse engineered the game and said, no, it isn't. B, the Switch is not powerful enough to do this. You need, like, high-spec PC to cope with the amount of calculations that's doing. You need fucking teraflops coming out your ass, mate. And then a load of the stuff that was supplemented in that post was drawn directly from my article. Like, for instance, one of Planet Entertainment's listed headquarters is a weird old house in the middle of Connecticut. And so people suddenly started going like, it's real! Because everyone's at home and has nothing to concentrate on in their lives, so everyone thinks Cooking Mama's stealing money from
One day we'll find that little house on GeoGuessr and we'll get it bang on. 1 meter away.
I know the road. I know the number on that road that is. We'll absolutely smash it. This immediately had to be shut down. After 2 years, the developer, who are called First Playable Productions, came out and said, it's not crypto mining. Don't worry about it. The publisher finally posted on the Cooking Mama Cookstar Twitter account, which had been silent for ages, saying no, obviously it's not, but the problem here is that we still don't know what's actually happened to the game. Like, this has kind of been a weird smokescreen. The game still technically isn't out anywhere. It might be coming out today, but who fucking knows? Like, I've talked to the distributor in Europe, which is Koch over here, and they're like, we literally don't know. Like,
that's good.
Right now, we don't know. Like, all they can say, it's not a no comment. It's a we don't know. So I'm talking to everyone, and there's this interview going out at the moment, or that went out on Screen Rant, which was a developer saying, "I work there. What's happened is the license holders in Japan came over to the US and wanted the game to be delayed because they didn't think it was good enough. The publisher then published the game without telling them. It went out, and then Office Create, the Japanese company, went to Nintendo and had it removed
that
from the
eShop. Sounds,
and now there's a legal."
That sounds like it could be right.
To me, yes. That's Occam's razor. Like, to me, that's what's happened as far as I can work it out. Mm-hmm. But
that's not fun.
But well, now here's this, right? The CEO of the developer went on Twitter and said, "This interview is from a person that doesn't exist. They've spoofed it. It's fake." And now I'm stuck in a situation of, like, I've talked to this CEO, and she's reiterated that point. The reason I haven't updated any articles at the moment is I'm trying to work out who's lying. I don't know if anyone actually is. I think there just might be wildly different takes on this, and no one's legally allowed to say stuff.
I can't wait for the Netflix series about this.
I'm in Zodiac.
Well, I just watched...
I am the Mark Ruffalo of Cooking
Mama. I actually, last week, watched McMillions, the HBO documentary about the McDonald's Monopoly scandal. And
yeah,
it's an all right documentary, but it has the sort of feeling to... I don't want to spoil that for people, but it has that sort of feel to it that there's just... this innocuous thing that's meant to be fun for people is just mad.
It's turned into this bizarre thing where it's all I'm thinking about. I can only think about Cooking Mama and wondering if people emailing me are making stuff up. Like, I don't know what's going on.
Do you know who I think it's? Who's behind all this? Carol Baskin.
I thought you were going to say 5G. Yeah.
I knew it. I knew it.
Carol Baskin.
It's Baskins again. Baskins is out robbing.
Baskins and Robbins.
I quite like that.
Very good.
All of which is to say I've gone mad, and that's kind of the whole... I just wanted to get it off my chest. But I'm still... if anyone is interested, I'm still trying to find out what's going on. I've got irons in the fire. I've got anonymous sources coming
to me. I can't wait for this podcast to be sourced and used in the Netflix doc.
I have to say, when I started doing... this job, the executive news editor job, I did not think that this would be the first major expose in my career.
It's all kicking off.
It's insane. But while I've been doing that, you've been playing and watching things.
Oh, yes.
Which is the next...
this is our new
arbitrary...
this is our weekly segment of, like, lockdown entertainment. What we...
oh, is this what we've been
kind
doing?
Of, yeah, just what have we been filling our time with, basically.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Go on,
well, I've been playing more Persona 5 Royal because that's what I do now. Mm-hmm. I'm now 95 hours in, so...
he's got an illness!
And how many hours have you played of Animal Crossing?
Ooh, I don't know. I haven't looked. It's a lot.
Well, that's a good... I'm going to have a look.
The past week, I've only been playing Animal Crossing maybe an hour or hour a day. Like, I've been popping and doing my stuff.
I'm amazed that you've managed to squeeze it all in.
Really?
Like, I know we're at home and everything, but still, like, I feel like I'm working all day.
If you take out...
yeah, it's weird. It's almost like he's not doing any work during the day.
No, I've got the proof. I've published things.
I've just seen that I've played for 85 hours in Animal Crossing.
You can say that, Dale. You're 50 hours into Final Fantasy. You've only had that a week.
You're jobber.
I've had it more than a week, mate. But yeah. Fair point.
But yeah, I'm now... last night, I finished... I got up to the point of Persona 5 Royal where Persona 5 ends. So I'm now into the new stuff, and it's the bit I'm really...
oh my God, you've just got to the new stuff.
Well, there's new stuff sprinkled in the whole way, but now's the new semester, the new palace, like the big new addition to the story.
Fucking hell.
And...
as someone who knows nothing about Persona, semester and new palace do not feel like things going together.
You know what semesters are. School semesters.
Yeah, I know.
There's a new school semester. And so palace are basically the big dungeons you do in Persona.
Right, okay.
So there's like 8 or 9 of them in the main game. But
I look forward to doing that in 20 years' time. I'm stoked for it.
It's so good. But yeah, I'm into new stuff, and it is a new twist on a palace with all the new characters, and it's... I don't want to spoil anything for anyone, but it started off well, and they're doing some cool story. There's a cool twist right at the beginning of that stuff, which I didn't actually see coming, which was very good.
Wow.
Because the main twist of Persona about 70 hours in is excellent.
70 hours in.
And then there's another one a few hours later, which is also excellent. Look, it's brilliant.
It makes me tired thinking about that
game.
It's
so good. But yeah, I've been doing that. It's still brilliant. I've also played the first 5 missions of the Modern Warfare 2 remaster. Jumped back into that for a few hours. I just did the one in Virginia where the invasion has started, basically, and you're defending like the Burger King and stuff.
Oh yeah, we're at the same point then.
Oh, nice. That game is a lot harder than I remember.
Like, well, maybe you're just worth, mate.
I don't think it is. Like, I'm just getting killed from enemies I'm not seeing. Like, I just walk into an area. I'm basically, what I'm doing is, I think I'm basically not taking cover. Because in the newest Modern Warfare, you don't really need to take much cover, I've found. You could kind of run through and kill. Whereas I think feel like Modern Warfare was and Modern Warfare 2 were trying to be a bit more military realistic in this fact. You can't just run out there and go blase. You actually have to take cover, take out a few enemies, move to the next bit of cover. And I'm forgetting to do that and dying a lot. But the story is still, I think it's still a great arc, that, especially those first two Modern Warfare games. 3 I still like, but it went a bit mad for me. But I just did the Vivella mission, which I know you love, Matt, Takedown. I personally do not like that mission at all.
I must say, replaying it, I don't like it as much. But I think part of that is, so originally I would have played it on PC, where it is a lot easier seek and shoot enemies with a mouse. And trying to do it on console, I'm finding, is quite a challenge.
Well, I forgot how generous the lock-on was on
console. It's mad, isn't it? It's almost Grand Theft Auto style.
You don't even have to aim. Yeah. Is it really? Yeah. You just like press L2, locks onto a head.
That's part of the tutorial as well. Like when the sergeant is shouting at you, he's like, yeah, just hold aim down sights and it'll snap to for you.
Yeah. It's mad. You have to adjust a little bit. Yeah. I'm still dying a lot though. But do you know what? I like the snow mission at the start of the game a lot more than I remember. Because I remember not liking that. But it's especially the the snow bike.
The snowmobile section.
Snowmobile stuff. Yeah. That is really
very fun. Inception.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I forgot that's what I loved about those Modern Warfare games is that each mission, a few were quite similar, but each mission has its own little quirk like that where you're doing something a bit out of the ordinary. And yeah, it looks great, sounds great. It's good game on Warfare 2, in case you didn't know.
Yeah. And that remaster looks a lot nicer than like when we did the graphics comparison.
Hmm.
Like the bit where you climb up the ice wall with soap.
Yes.
It's not just like a basic texture change. It is like that entire wall has been like, I don't think it's been fully remodeled, but it looks so much more detailed than it used to.
Like if that game came out, like the shooting does feel a little bit dated and the lock-on does, but looks wise, if that came out, you wouldn't really think this doesn't look good because it looks great. The one other thing I did, I binged all of the Netflix documentary series, Sunderland Till I Die.
I'm thinking about watching this.
Do you know what? I never watched season one when it came out, and season two came out a week ago. So I started from the start and just binged all of it. It's quite done. They're like half an hour, 35 minute episodes. And it's only like 8 or 10. I think actually the second series only has 6 episodes. But it's just really good. If you're not into football, you might not get much out of it. But
when I watched the first series, I got 2 episodes in, but it made me so sad.
Oh yeah, it's definitely.
Like I cringed so much at all these decisions, and like it's going so badly for them.
Yeah.
And you remember that they're real people, and you're like,
especially
I
know
this is horrible
what happens in real life. Obviously, I know what happens, what the outcome of the optimism at the start of it is. Is quite sad. But they have a really good cast of characters. Like the fans they have are really good, and they have like much more access to actual players and stuff and footage than I was expecting, because normally when you're dealing with football stuff, clubs are very protective of their players and don't really let them speak their minds, whereas you get a lot of
That was a big thing when it came out, right? Because everyone was like, how the fuck did they make this? This isn't meant to be a professional football club.
Like like on deadline day talking about players they didn't get and stuff, and like I'm amazed they show that, and like players actively like talking, saying like, yeah, I don't really agree with what the manager's doing here. It's like, I'm very surprised they put that in.
That's
there
mad.
But
I guess maybe they knew it was coming out so far away that it was just like, oh, well, we'll just...
When is the date range then?
So the first series was 2 seasons ago, and the second series is last season.
Okay.
So then going...
But it came out like after the events of that season had finished, right?
Yeah, it's all... Yeah. And so basically, it's just really good. If you're not into football, I don't know if you'll get much out of it, to be honest with you. But they do present it in a way that they give you all the basic information of, like, stuff that I don't bat an eyelash to, an eyelid to even. just like what a league is, and if you get promoted, what happens. But they present that well.
But ultimately, it is just about a really poorly run business.
Especially, like, there's some...
Weirdly, for a business, has loads of people in the town who are like, I love this business.
So in the second
series... I would die for this business.
In the second series, they have two new owners. And one of them seems genuinely like he wants this club to do well. He likes football and he's very invested. The other guy is very David Brent. And he has some moments where he's like there's the bit, I think it's a clip that's going around of when they're trying to choose new like stadium intro music, and he's going very Brent. He's like, we need this. And he puts on like a Ibiza like dance club hit. And then like he goes, he's like going around and like, imagine this. And then like one guy in the corner just goes, it doesn't matter what we play. The PA's terrible, and they just cut to his face, and he just looks like he wants to kill him. So there's good moments like that. So, and it's also inspired me to start a new football manager save as Sunderland. I had my time as Newcastle. I've gone over to Wearside, but I'm not properly doing that. That's just if I'm a bit bored and want to fill half an hour at like midnight. So yeah, that's what I've been doing,
Matt. Tell me what you've been up to.
I have, like I said, I've played a little bit of Modern Warfare 2, but also after I finished Final Fantasy 7, I decided I wanted more Final Fantasy, so I played some 14. I haven't played 14 for years. Mm. And so I know you played a little bit not so long ago, didn't you?
Yeah, I did about 5 or so hours. Mm. I kind of got into it and then suddenly realised what I was doing was playing an MMO, and I remembered that I don't like them. And like, no matter how well it's been, and it has, like, it's very impressive how well it caters to a single player. But no matter how much it does that, I'm ultimately walking around a world that's just covered in fucking text and people's names and titles and like stats popping up and like it's all this shit that I don't that want does, in my single player game.
So
there's a lot to it that I enjoyed and was impressed by, but not enough to commit to.
The reason why, because MMOs aren't typically my deal. Like I played a lot of WoW when I was younger, but I did about 50 hours in Final Fantasy 14 the first time round. But I've got a few friends that play it religiously, and apparently it's one of these where like apparently the expansion packs are like genuinely top tier Final Fantasy.
I know.
But I know it takes me a long time to get there, but it was a bit like, if I'm ever going to do it, it's when I'm locked up in my house. So I'm going to try it. We'll see how far I get. Like, I'm not...
That's it. People say Shadowbringers' story is like legitimately incredible, right? Mm-hmm. Like, not even from a Final Fantasy aspect, just like, this is an amazing thing that's happened.
Yeah, exactly. And sort of like, I do really want to experience that. And I've heard like the raids, because there's a lot of like... There's raids based on Final Fantasy VII. There are raids based on Nier and stuff like that. I want to see all that, but whether I've got the patience to see it out in a genre that I don't typically go for. Because if we're talking about like night and day between the combat system of 14 and 7 Remake, like, I'm not a big fan of cooldown-based MMO combat. Already, because obviously my character is quite low level at the moment, that's trying my patience a bit, because I've got 4 skills and, you know, 2 of them you have to use in rapid succession in order to get anywhere, and that's already boring me. But that's there's it. Also, you know, when I said sort of like a couple of weeks ago I've been playing The Division 2, and there was a certain amount of catharsis in this troubled time of just playing games that are just kind of like, go here, do this, go here, do this, go here, do this, and that sort of like clearing a map and just that sort of element is doing something for me. So But yeah, when I'm not doing that, I've got an hour left of Half-Life, which is nice after I've finished Final Fantasy VII to be able to go back to Half-Life, because where I left it, it was properly kicking off as if like, no, Half-Life Alyx is actually Half-Life 3. So like, it's nice to jump back into that. And when I'm not doing that, I'm painting Warhammer.
Nice. Yeah. Dale?
Mostly, to be honest, playing Final Fantasy VII, but I feel like I've just about wrapped up with that now. But we've also been watching Ozark Season 3. I spoke about this a little bit last week, but we finished it last night. And I just want to say it's very, very good and everybody should watch it. Because I feel like...
I've heard the ending is especially very good.
Yes, very shocking as well. Like, I feel like this is a show that everyone says is good, but it doesn't feel like it ever pushes through that conversation. Mm-hmm. It never feels like everybody's talking about it. It just feels like a select few. But it's got... I mean, it's still... basically Breaking Bad, but about money laundering, right? And this season especially has a lot of beats, which I believe. So I guess, yeah, season three of Breaking Bad, it has a lot of beats that are quite similar to that as well. But that's a good show. That's a good thing to model.
Season one and I need to catch up.
Maybe I would say you'd have a massive advantage watching two and three back to back, because two feels like such a long time ago. There was constant moments where we had to pause it and we're like, wait, what happened with that person again? Because they refer back to a lot of season two stuff and it felt like it was a long time ago we watched it. So watching it back to back would be really helpful, I'd imagine.
Season one
was one of those ones where I finished it and then went, that's enough for me. But everyone says season three is really good and I'm going to have to push through season two to get to it.
I don't think season two is bad though at all. Like, I think it was every season kind of has a different, like, goal, what they're aiming towards and like who they're becoming. Obviously, like any show, you know, they're progressing, but I think the main hook of season three was really interesting. And I'm excited to see what they do next, because there definitely will be more from the way they leave it at the end of this season as well.
Oh, a tease. Oh.
Also been doing DIY, because I'm in my 30s and I'm married, and that's the thing that you get told to do when you're in isolation.
Well, that reminds me, update, we've painted the shed now. It's now a nice pastel green. So
that's the same color as my bathroom.
Oh, right, there we go.
It's kind of like greeny bluey sort of color.
Yeah.
That's going to be that's going to be 2020's avocado green bathroom, isn't it?
Yeah. Like,
in a few years people will be like, "Wow, remember when we did fucking turquoise everywhere?" Yeah. What were we thinking?
Well, I mean we're trying to sell our flat. Obviously we're not going to sell it right now, but we are going to try and sell it once it's all over.
I dare you to sell it right now.
So we thought, we'll give the bathroom a new lick of paint, make it look modern. It'll be modern for a couple of years and then it'll be outdated, but it won't matter because we were sold it by then and we'll be out.
Laughing.
See you later, dickhead.
Laughing all the way to the bank.
Yeah. Please buy my flat.
I'll give you an update on me. Alongside Animal Crossing, which I'm not going to talk about, I've been playing a game called In Other Waters. Speaking of very turquoisey, greeny things, it is a game that I'm going to say, Dale,
hello.
You'd hate it.
Okay.
Cardi, I'm not sure it'd be for you. Matt, I reckon you'd like it. That's my guess.
Mean?
It's a game about
it means it must be
being
quite,
on an alien
it must
planet.
Be quite sensitive and emotional, then, because Dale don't like it.
How dare
Dale don't feel feelings. Feelings for a week. It's a game about being on an alien planet, but you are an AI in someone's diving suit who is trying to catalog an alien ocean. Essentially, what you're seeing is a map and a series of like screens for like analysis. And you're just moving around this map, slowly learning about all the stuff in this sea. But because you're an AI, you're not seeing anything other than like the basic sort of computer elements of like, there's a topographical map. There's like elements that you're collecting and samples and stuff. But as you collect them and catalog them, you then get the sketches of those things in the person you're helping's notes. So you're like seeing it after the fact.
Okay.
And it's got this like basic story of someone went to this alien planet and then went missing, and you've come after them and you're trying to follow up their research, but also try and find out where they went.
It sounds like it's kind of got observation and Outer Wilds sort of things
so
in there.
It's got all of that, except it's not depicted in a 3D world. It's kind of observation, but you're just playing on the map.
Okay.
If you see what I mean. I really like it so far. It's like, it's very gentle, and I think if it doesn't change too much, I will get bored. But I think it is changing and giving me more abilities and stuff like that. Mm. And the story's intriguing.
What can I play
and
that on?
Switch and PC.
Ooh.
I haven't tried it in handheld on Switch yet. I think it might be very confusing on a small screen because there's a lot of text. But it's also like one of the most beautiful UIs I've ever seen, because it's all UI. Mm. And it's this like turquoise and yellow color scheme, and it's just really, really pretty. And that's just nice. And it's got great sound effects of like bleepy bloopy music and kind of like nice underwater sounds.
The sound of water is very relaxing, isn't it? The sound of it's the tide like slapping against the sand.
Slapping.
There, nothing relaxes me like the sound of slapping.
Do you have an Amazon Echo or something like that in your house?
I don't, but I have YouTube.
So, fair enough. But I've often told we've got a Google one. I forget what it's called now, but the Google one in our bedroom. And every now and again, I'll just play the sound of water or the thunderstorms. I like the sound of thunderstorms. It's nice and relaxing. Yeah.
And screams and slaps.
Anna just has slaps, torture chamber. Screams. Now, Anna's always got fireplaces or woods.
Yeah, that's a good one, yeah.
Or weirdly, the Gryffindor common room on our TV at the moment. It's really nice. You just walk through and I'm in a different place
every
time.
It's kind of a family routine at Christmas time when we're doing presents, put on one of the Netflix fireplaces. The sound of that crackle, I highly recommend.
Yeah, just every so often gives you that little buzz of the as a wood bit goes
off. Best bits.
Also, Community's back on Netflix.
It is.
That show is still amazing, apart from a lot more gay jokes than I remember.
There are.
Ago. There's a lot of jokes that are just, you are gay. Yeah.
They're all Chevy. Most of them are Chevy Chase.
Most of them, it's generally meant to be from bad characters.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is bizarre. Like, you just watch it and you're like, this is Dan Harmon. He's still doing a lot of comedy right now. And I am... You know, I'm fascinated by that very sudden change in comic style. But it's still brilliant. Like the have you all watched Community?
One of my favorite shows of all time. Like, I adore it.
The Chicken Fingers episode is still one of the most insanely accomplished bits of comic storytelling that I've ever seen.
Dungeons and Dragons episode for me.
Yeah. Incredible. Like, series two is unbelievably good. If you haven't watched Community, you should do that. Also, I've talked about Ellis James and John Robbins' radio show on here before, but John Robbins' award-winning The Darkness of Robin stand-up show just went on Netflix. And if you want to laugh a lot and also feel like you're going to cry at someone else's horrible life for an hour, it's amazing. It's absolutely incredible. There's a bit, the kind of extended joke he closes on in that show is so amazing and so horrible, and then has such a good punchline that there's very little else like it. Like, if you like that James Acaster set of specials on Netflix, it will do stuff for you.
Nice.
And that's me. Now let's do a quiz. In it
inside it's a UK IGN crew. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games, gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Hold tight, the DJ, we coming through. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games, gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Is it in the search?
Cardi, you're
up. Oh, yeah, I'm doing one. I say I'm doing one. We've delightfully had an endless search sent in from Alex Scorey, who says, hi, guys.
Hi.
Yeah, hello. Yeah. Hey. Them there. It was hey, guys.
Sorry.
There you go. Big fan of the podcast. During a recent endless search, one of you, can't remember who, suggested a version of the Perpetual Pursuit using games instead of movies.
I think it was Jesse, from what I remember.
There we go.
Well, I don't remember what this game is.
I'll explain to you. I like the idea so much, I made a bunch of them for my friends and thought you might want to use them as well. He did. He made like 20 or 30 odd. I've picked out 10. Basically, Joe, it is the synonym game. So an example of Call of Duty Modern Warfare would be Shout of Assignment Contemporary Battles.
Yes, I do remember this game.
So, there's an example. But I've got 10 more for you here. And it's a three-way game. So it's just whoever. You don't have to buzz, but if you know it, say it. And I'll keep a little scoreboard. Okay, are we ready?
Okay.
Here we go. So the first, and there's also, if none of you get it, I've got the year the game released as a little clue. So there we go. First one, Paraphernalia of Strife.
Paraphernalia of Strife.
And
is of still the same
words
word.
Like of and the aren't changing. paraphernalia of
Right. Oh, I feel like this is on the edge of my brain.
Where are you going there? The edge of my
I'm not edging.
Oh, paraphernalia of strife.
Oh god.
No idea. 2006 game.
Doesn't help at
all. Xbox game.
Gears of War.
It is Gears of War.
Oh, there you go.
Paraphernalia of strife.
How the fuck is paraphernalia from Gears?
Gear, like if you have gear, you have paraphernalia.
But that's not Gears.
Paraphernalias, then. I don't know.
Thank you.
It's close enough. This is not, from experience, this is not an easy game to write. So give it a rest. Right, number two. Subway Migration.
Train Simulator? No.
Oh, I like how your brain went there.
Subway Migration. Tony Hawk's Underground.
I will tell you, it's a game that came out last year.
Sorry, I just want to point out there's a man across my road who, for the last 2 days, has been standing in the same place for long periods of time. I saw him earlier and I was like, oh, he's back. He's just re-emerged wearing a different shirt.
Ooh. Maybe he's had a shower.
He's just disappeared and come back with a different shirt, but he's just standing in a driveway. Oh, he's just looked at
Is it Is it something like Tube Mapper or something like that?
What the hell is that?
I don't know, but there's
mini metro.
Yeah, mini metro.
Driving a mini metro. it's not. It is in a series of games, a series of shooters.
Oh, I was way off.
It came out last year.
Yeah,
there were no shooters last year.
Migration. There were. How many more clues can I do for this? Completely.
I think
Russia.
Metro Exodus.
Metro Exodus. Yes. So,
I don't really want the point for that.
Well, do you know what? I'll give you a half.
Thanks.
just let me actually write that properly. cool. Number three. Cumbersome Torrent.
What was the second word?
Heavy Rain.
Heavy Rain.
There we go.
Joe's smashing it. Come on, lads. 2.5 to go there.
Ooh.
Still 7 more to go, though. There's plenty of time. Beast Bridge. Bit of Beast Bridge for you.
Animal Crossing?
It is Animal Crossing.
Yeah. Nice.
Very nice. Yeah, that's good.
Bit of Beast Bridge. I'd play Beast Bridge. Don't know what it is, but I'll play it. Maybe
it's Animal Crossing, but there's a lot of like purges.
Yeah. number five, Partial Activity.
Half-Life?
It is Half-Life.
Oh, okay.
On a run.
He's on the combat trail.
Got it. He's got it. It's 2.5 to 2 to Joe and Dale on nothing. Come on, mate.
You're right.
Don't embarrass yourself. Number six, here's one for Dale. Lifeless Germ.
All right. is it Dead Cells?
It is Dead Cells. I told you. That's exactly what I meant by that. There we go. So it's 2.5, 2-1. Still all to play for with 4 left. I like this one. Magnificent Muscle Lad.
Oh no.
One Punch Man?
No. The Magnificent... Not The, sorry. Magnificent Muscle Lad.
Can't get Beautiful Joe out of my head.
Brilliant Bicep Bro.
No.
Muscle Lad. That's such a weird one.
Muscle is it definitely is a synonym for this, but it's not as obvious. Like,
yeah.
magnificent and lad are very, they are genuine synonyms. It is a 2010 game, if that helps at all.
Oh, okay.
Is it something Monster Boy?
No, but the last...
Yeah, Boys, right? Obviously, yeah.
It's a platformer.
Oh, Super Box Boy.
No.
Super Meat Boy.
Super Meat Boy.
Dale's stolen it.
It's not called Super Box Boy, it's just Box Boy for fun.
Meat is a bit of a stretch to muscle. Yeah, but come on.
Meat is muscle. Get our new protein.
Should have said animal or
animal.
Other words.
Animal doesn't mean meat.
No, but meat is animal.
You just look at an animal, meat.
Meat, you are meat. Family dog, you are meat.
Oh, good. Good one. So that's two to Dale, two to Matt, two and a half to Joe with two.
Ooh.
Can I have that three one, that half point?
If you need it.
No, I don't want it.
Three left. Booster Federation.
No idea.
Booster.
No. What about the year, Cuddy? What's the year?
2015. I think it's on absolutely everything, but it did start on PlayStation.
Rocket League.
It is Rocket League.
There we go.
Oh, Federation. Oh. All I could think was country. I was like, Donkey Kong Country?
After a slow start, Dale's gone into the lead with 3 points.
Absolute smash. Yeah.
Here's another one for Dale. No.
What are you going to call me? Are you going to call me a germ again?
Rim Sprinter.
Say again.
Rim Sprinter.
You said rim, right? So now I'm just thinking of loads of motor stolen games.
What are you thinking?
Rim Sprinter.
It's
not a game called Edge Runner, is there?
No. Not Edge Talk. 1993.
Oh.
Had a famous E3 moment.
Ridge Racer.
It is Ridge Racer.
Nice. Nice.
There we go. So that's now Dale on three, Matt on three, Joe on two and a half. For being too honourable.
Restore the point!
Literally all to play for on the last one. And we've got a good one. Number 10. Are you ready? Mute Bluff. That's Mute Bluff.
Silent Hill.
It is. He's picked
nice.
It on three and a half. Three and a half. Dang. Three, three. You couldn't have written that if you wanted.
That was exciting.
Yeah. Oh, that was.
We should do it with three people all the time. What are we doing?
That was very fun. Thank you, Alex. There are more of those, which I can use another time, but also very happy for people to send things like that in to IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com.
Mm-hmm.
Talking of feedback, Joe.
Yeah.
I think Matt's first.
Yeah, we'll do that. Matt's first. Yeah.
Oh, it is cool. Matt first.
There we go. So we've got one from Alex Madison, who says, "Hi, guys.
Hello.
I know this is probably a bit contentious, given the feedback to your controversial review, but back in... Huh?
It's not our controversial review. It's a controversial review. I distance myself from it.
I was 10 years later than this.
But back in July 2007, Capcom released an action game called God Hand for the PS2. What did we give it? Was it like a 4?
Yeah, like 5, I think.
Oh, I can't remember.
I think it's lower than that.
Really?
I think it was very low. I think it was
I'll have a look.
Historically low.
Anyway, it was mad as fuck game where you played as a character with a powerful hand, but what it did to stand out for me was that it allowed you to unlock new combat moves as you progressed and then piece them together in a menu as a combo in any order you wished. Customizable combo menu. Where has this been since? It was bloody awesome. Thanks, Alex. It was actually in...
It's in Absolver.
It's also in... What's the one that Don't Nod did before Life is Strange? Remember Me. That's got a customizable combo system.
Yeah. I mean,
it's not
Absolver's very cool, but it didn't get enough players to really work. It was a Devolver game that was like an online brawler, which seemed incredibly hard to me.
Very cool masks as well.
Yeah. Remember cool Me just wasn't that good.
I've played any of those games, but that does sound like a cool mechanic.
Yeah. Also, we should point out that Mitchell Saltzman, our now action expert, did do a sort of 10 years later apology piece about God Hand. He didn't do the original review, I should point out, but he kind of took on IGN's mantle and sort of went out there and went, yeah, bit of a misstep that. Was that Mikami?
No idea. I've never played God Hand.
I've never played it.
Because it was the mad... you could like spank people onto the horizon. It's a Clover game. It was Capcom.
Apparently Mikami was upset about it. It might have ruined his career. It didn't.
He's all right. He did all right.
He's fine. Yeah. So there we go.
Oh yeah, it was Mikami and Inaba who both did Platinum Business. Mm-hmm. They did Vanquish and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. There you go. Have that.
I've got some feedback here from Luke Hudson, who says, "Hi, UK IGN podcast crew."
Hello.
Hello. It is IGN UK rather than UK IGN.
Oh,
that's
come
fine.
On, mate. First of all, wanted to say you are all both good and or crap, depending on who is hosting this week.
Oh, cheers, mate.
Yeah.
Thank you. I know which one I like.
I wanted to bring in some feedback after your section on Half-Life Alyx a couple of weeks ago and VR in general. I was wondering if you have any older, perhaps discontinued franchises which could benefit from a reboot in VR. For me, I would love to have a remake of the two Light Gun series, Time Crisis and House of the Dead. Even. Both, I think, lend themselves really well to a VR duck and cover experience. What do you think? We kind of had a little talk about this, like worlds we'd want to see in VR, but we didn't talk about specific games that I do think something like Time Crisis would work.
It's kind of Have you played Robo Recall?
I haven't.
It's fucking amazing, and it feels like a robot themed Time Crisis. It's like you can rip off robots' arms and then hit them with them. It's great.
That does sound very good. Something like Blood and Truth is kind of a bit like that at times. There's a lot of
Honestly. Yes, most games with guns in VR are basically riffing on Time Crisis in some way. Mm-hmm. But I would love to see something as mad and blue skiesy and stupid as Time Crisis return in that form. That would be really cool.
What about?
Because not many people have fun with it.
Imagine how mad Mikami would go in VR. Get him in.
he'd be mental. Just going nuts.
Was just left. Was just left.
He's gone for a week.
He left a
message. He didn't want you to say that, though.
Oh, well.
Put it in chat.
There we go. Dale decided to go to the toilet, is what I'm telling you.
We could cut this bit out and just say, like, Dale, what do you think? That's it. what other old discontinued franchises?
So,
I don't know.
I'd really like... Remember Steel Battalion?
Yes, I do.
So Steel Battalion, obviously, when it originally came out, you had to buy a controller that was the size of a tank in order to use it.
I want that controller so much.
So for anybody that doesn't know what Steel Battalion is, it's a mech game, no surprise coming from me, in which like you basically, the controller was a mech's cockpit with a million different buttons on it. Well, the thing about VR is, and they sort of tried this, like I think the sequel to Steel Battalion was Kinect, right?
Yeah, they did a Kinect one where you had to like stand up to look outside and stuff.
Mm-hmm. And so the thing is Kinect didn't work super great, but VR is a lot more responsive to that. So I like the idea, like in VR, you can have a 70-button controller. It just doesn't have to physically exist because it exists in virtual reality. And I just really want a mech game in VR.
Mm. Peter Moore, ex-VA, famously... semi-famously used to not have a second chair in his office. It was just a Steel Battalion box. I think that was when he was at Xbox, obviously.
Black and white in VR, some sort of God game.
I would. Yeah. I black and white in VR would really work, actually. Like, being a God game would really work, because you're just, like, picking stuff up, moving it around, like City, affecting wider spaces.
So, I've played a really good VR game, which is called Asgard's Wrath, which in which you play as the god of animals, which I know is a bizarre
meat.
Sort of
stuff. The god of meat.
Exactly. But the thing, what you can do in it is, so most of the time you're actually playing as, like, a Skyrim-style RPG, but you can then turn into the god of animals, where you get that black and white style above the ground thing. And you can just pick animals up and turn them into companions for your character. So you can, like, pull a shark out the water and turn him into a shark man. And then he becomes, like, a companion for your character.
I'm into that.
But that sort of being in the sky in VR and, like, being able to pull, like, lightning bolts out the sky and stuff like that, that is super cool. So, yeah, I think black and white would really work.
What about totally accurate battle simulator in VR and you can get involved with them?
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That actually sounds really good because they basically move with as much grace as I
do. Football manager in VR, so I can sit on sit in the dugout and watch the games.
Watch really low poly characters. Look,
I'd still
around.
Do it. Dale, I told everyone you'd gone to the toilet because I didn't see your message. Oh, so,
cheers, mate.
You're back.
Yeah, I'm back. Yeah.
Does it still smell of nice paint in your...
No. It's sort of died down now. It's just normal.
You've covered it. You've covered it up.
Mm. Yeah.
With your own smells.
Good. Joe.
Lovely.
Hello. Yeah, this is from Barry Stevenson. Hi, guys. It's the second time I've written in. The last time I did, you played my endless search quiz, which I'm disappointed you haven't revisited. Bunch of bastards.
Chill out, mate.
In brackets, it was guessing the movie from Famous Lines. I used The Goonies as an example, and you admitted you hadn't seen it. It's a classic.
Wait, who hadn't seen The Goonies?
I haven't.
Me.
All right.
Yeah.
Come on, boys.
We were doing a rope survey the last time I wrote in, which seemed to confuse the shit out of you guys. This time, we are trenching an umbilical and a pipeline, and then surveying it to make sure it has been buried deep enough. I can confirm it's as dull as it sounds.
Why are we talking about it?
Anyway, I don't know. Cheers for keeping the podcast coming while in isolation. This bit's good. I'm listening to them while walking around and round the heli deck off the coast of Egypt to get my daily step count up. I'm guessing he's on an aircraft carrier, but I'm not sure. I'm really regretting not taking my Xbox offshore with me this time. I could have finally completed Red Dead 2, along with the backlog of other games I have. I did take my Switch with me, though, so I have Zelda, Mario, and I'm replaying The Witcher 3.
That's a good selection.
Hopefully, you're all keeping well and managing to fill the game stuck at home. I'm looking forward to getting home mid-May to get into the new Doom. And that could be a description of what our country is.
I want the Doom.
Should we just rename ourselves as Doom?
For the important stuff. Oh, this is just him going through loads of stuff we've talked about recently. Yeah. Pick and mix.
Yes.
They are heavy as fuck, but chocolate Brazil nuts are a must.
They are good.
Oh, Matt's gone.
No, I'm still here. It's just because of my daft setup. I now no longer have a webcam. Sorry.
Just to hear you though, so it's all
yeah, very odd. Okay. Don't question it. He's gone into Asgard's Wrath God mode. You're going to see a shark man pop up on another feed. Along with chocolate peanuts, crispy, chewy chocolate squares. Crispy, chewy chocolate.
What? I've never seen them in a pick and mix.
And mini eggs to complete the chocolate section. Then for jellies, it has to be classic Haribo rings and cola bottles.
Yeah. Milk
your jazzies, chocolate mice, shrimps and bananas all belong in the
what?
Bin.
What?
I love a milk bottle so much.
Oh, milk bottles are great. Yeah. VR game adaptation. Some sort of Diablo-esque dungeon crawler would be brilliant, scary as fuck, and most likely motion sickness inducing, but could look amazing.
Sounds great. It would make you sick.
Yeah. Books. You mentioned Hugh Howey's Wool. Is that how you say
yep,
it?
Yep, that's the one.
Yeah. It's just for I've just finished book one, and I'm about to start number two today. Thanks for the recommendation. It's brilliant. Can't wait to see where they take the story now. If you haven't read Bobby Adair's The Last Survivor series and spin-off series Dusty's Diary, it's definitely worth a read if you're into the post-apocalyptic genre. Anyway, best be off. We have pipe to look at. Take it easy. Barry Stevenson from Banff, Scotland, but currently offshore Egypt. Barry the far-flung pipe boy.
Yeah, look, right. Got to look at that pipe.
Dale, close us out because we've been going for ages.
That email read like he just listened to our podcast and made notes while he was listening to it and just read it.
I know, I want everyone to do it. I don't want these cohesive, well-told stories. I want a bit about pipe and then responses to six different episodes.
Okay, this one's from Martin Lindstam. He says, hello, IGN UK, long-time listener, first-time writer, etc. Why? Because until now, nothing has gotten me so riled up that I have to let you know about it. But that all changed when you said, is the Segway the most useless mode of transport ever created?
Yes. Who said me.
That? Cardi said it, but I agreed.
I've done off-road Segwaying. You're both right.
I said, it's as useless as a space opera is, mate. At least that's fun.
That's insane. Why are you talking? Oh, you've talked a lot of shit already.
As someone who's been to the World Cup finals of Segway Polo twice, as a spectator.
I thought he was a player for a second. That would have been.
What would that have been?
Better.
Sorry, Martin.
I have to disagree with you. It's the most glorious sporting event I've ever had the chance to attend, and I saw Zlatan score a 30-yard bicycle kick against England.
We all started that, mate.
But it just can't hold a candle to the sheer drama of Segway Polo. It's not as slow as a game as you'd imagine, given that it's played by people on Segways trying to hit a ball with a club. I've always thought that it would make a great VR game, steering a Segway with one hand, holding your club in the other.
You'd be sick within mental. 8 seconds of playing that game.
VR Segway Polo, the hit that PlayStation VR need.
Could you play polo on a kick bike or on a skateboard or on a unicycle? Yes. Yeah, all of them. I guess technically, yes, but you get the point.
You could definitely do it on a skateboard.
Yeah. Respect the Segway. Respect the beautiful game.
I don't respect the Segway. I'm sorry.
Thanks for all the great content. If I come across a bit mad, it's probably because I'm Swedish and because I'm the Football Days podcast and the state of the world, I guess. There we go.
Also, that really illuminates how much he likes the Segway Polo, because I assumed he was an English fan watching Zlatan score that goal. Yeah. That's his own countryman scoring. Yeah.
I'm going to have to look up some VR Segway Polo. Just Segway Polo. VR Segway Polo doesn't exist.
I think that sounds fucking amazing. I would play Segway. I wonder if it's contact sport.
Ooh. I mean, it sounds like
demolition derby, but with Segway.
Sounds like it's hard not to be contact, right? We've got those Segways flying around everywhere.
You'd be an absolute bruiser in Segway. Yeah. You'd be mental.
Doing sly tackles with it.
Just two wheels. Jumping off and yanging it into people.
You'll just be hitting people with the club, not aiming for the ball.
Get off the Segway and start swinging it around your head.
Turn the club around and stick it into the spokes on the wheel.
They call him the Uruk-hai of Segway Polo.
The Uruk-hai?
I don't know anymore.
I have no idea. That's
have you guys ever seen the Polish Medieval Combat League?
No.
That's have something you? To Google.
The old PMCL. Fucking...
Yeah, exactly. So, in terms of contact sports, like in Poland, there's like a medieval combat league where like people literally just get in full plate armor with shields and swords and beat the ever living fuck out of each other. And it is the most entertaining thing you will watch today.
Wait, do people die?
So I don't think like they sharpen the swords, but like it's brutal. Like type it into Google and like watch the first like videos. It's incredible.
Even though the sword's not sharp, it still sounds like you can do damage if you're going full force at somebody.
I'd imagine
it's called a combat league.
Come on, mate. We can't all do kung fu in our living room. We have to get out.
Yeah, some people need to do their cardio in combat. I just shadow box against mysterious fighters.
Against the Gryffindor common room.
Yeah, against the sounds of the Gryffindor common room and the disappointed stare of my ill girlfriend.
You better do some more of that.
Yeah, seems as good a time to stop as any. It's about lunchtime. I'm going to go and do some flying kicks.
Kia.
Are we still doing music?
Yeah. What did we? We've got absolute final.
Hey, let's do karate guy. Let's put karate guy.
We don't want any fun. Fine. We've had enough Final Fantasy music.
Karate guy.
Be a karate guy then. Okay. Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay then. Bye then.
Bye.
Bye.
One, two, three, four. I like to kick it. I'm a good Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's H-Y-P-E-R-T-H-E-T-I-C-A-L.